Welcome to LongTrailPodcast.com, a new series of podcasts about Vermont's Long Trail, the oldest long-distance hiking trail in the United States. I'm Ruff, and my wife, who is also my hiking partner, is Tumble. We're podcasting today from Delray Beach, Florida, our home away from the Green Mountains during our non-hiking months. In this podcast, I recall my first overnight in my new hammock, June 26th to 27th, 2005, Bean Trail to Appalachian Gap via Cow's Cove Shelter, a total of 9.9 miles. Wow! I am heading for my first night in my Clark Tropical Jungle Hammock. My plan is to hike the Bean Trail to Birch Glen Camp, then north on the Long Trail to Cow's Cove Shelter for the night. The next day, I will head back south, past Birch Glen Camp, and finish at Appalachian Gap. When I left Birch Glen Camp, my pack felt only slightly heavier than it did when I hiked up to the camp, having forgotten to fill my water bladder before leaving home. I was feeling pretty good, although it was a hot day with little or no breeze. The trail north of Birch Glen Camp maintains a fairly constant elevation with several stream crossings over some very slimy rocks. It was a warm day, and during the up portions I started to sweat heavily. Knowing what was ahead, I was not looking forward to an encounter with my nemesis, a particularly difficult climb over a slippery rock with a steep drop-off on the left. Over the years I have had all sorts of difficulty getting past this obstacle. Sure enough, after about 25 minutes of hiking, it appeared with its usual Cheshire Cat grin, saying, "Ready to try again?" I very carefully and slowly crept across the rock and along the upper edge near the foliage and gingerly stepped down to the trail. Phew. A little while later, I tapped my hiking pole on the dragon's nose, a log protruding into the trail in the shape of a dragon's head, which has been there as long as I can remember. He winked at me in recognition of my conquering the nemesis. It's amazing how one personalizes a trail after hiking it several times. I met a male hiker sporting a full backpack who told me that he was out day hiking with his heavy pack in preparation for a planned hike of the southern portion of the Long Trail. He is section hiking in his quest to be an end-to-ender. I pushed on and entered Huntington Gap. I couldn't believe how much I was sweating. 85 degrees, no breeze, and humidity in the 200th percentile may have been contributing factors. After Huntington Gap, the trail heads up a rocky riverbed and then begins a steep climb to the top of a ridge. I was sucking so much wind that the trees were beginning to lean in my direction. I stopped at the top and took off my pack for a needed break. Whose idea was it to hike all the way to Cowell's Cove to spend the night in my hammock when Birch Glen Camp would have been just fine? I could be swinging now instead of ringing. I pushed on past several deep mud pits. Ballet training would have come in handy here, and slabbed over rocks and trees. This was much harder than I remembered from last year, when I was younger, in better shape, experiencing a cooler day, was only carrying a day pack, and obviously had a better attitude. I arrived at Cow's Cove Shelter at 3:30 p.m., a two-hour trip of 2.9 miles from Birch Glen. No one else was there, and I tried to call Tumble, my wife and a hiking buddy, on my cell phone, but could not get through. Verizon seems to know where all the wilderness areas are in Vermont and uses all their advanced technology to deny service in these areas, as if a bear never uses a cell phone. My first task was to locate a suitable pair of trees for the hammock. I quickly determined where to hang, emphasis on quickly, because I was convinced there were hundreds of hammock-laden hikers converging on Cow's Cove that would be arriving any minute to deny me the perfect hang. By coincidence, the spot I chose was the exact same place that my son and I, and later Tumble and I, had tented in the past. By no coincidence, it turned out to be the only two trees in the tenting area that didn't have young maple trees and other assorted flora growing between them. It took me about 10 minutes to set up the hammock. I guide out the rainfly using a small tree, a small hobble bush, and my hiking poles. I put my sleep mat inside and then my unzipped sleeping bag. I got into the hammock to try it out and discovered that my sleeping bag was in backwards. Very exciting. Next, I grabbed my water purifier, Nalgene water bottle, my new water carrier, and slid down to the nearby stream and proceeded to filter enough water to refill my Camelback, cook dinner, wash my face, and end the drought in Arizona. After that, I laid out all my packed goodies and then headed over to the shelter to cook my chili dinner, which consisted of 1 cup of water, boil it, add chili mix, stir, self-cook for 10 minutes. It was delicious. I had mango slices for dessert and then cleaned up the kitchen and hung my food bag, stove, and pots in the shelter. I also emptied my pack and hung it in the shelter. By this time, it was 5 p.m., and I realized that I was all alone. Of course, if you count the 10 gazillion hovering flying insects as company, then I was in Disney World on New Year's Eve. What does one do in this situation? I had no experience at this. I tried to call Tumble again with no luck. I thought I heard Verizon customer service laughing in the background. I looked up at the clear blue sky. I blew at the bugs. I checked my watch. 5:05 p.m. It didn't get dark until 8:30 p.m. With this much time on my hands, I could knit a second hammock. I sat in the shelter waiting for hikers to arrive. No one came. I considered cooking and eating breakfast in advance. The Yankees were playing the Mets. I looked skyward in hopes of spotting the Goodyear blimp. Shortly after 6 p.m., I started loading the pockets of my hammock with goodies. Since I had changed to my camp shoes, I put one hiking boot in each of two pockets. My fanny pack with camera and phone went into another pocket. My toiletries, keys, and other pocket items went into the fourth pocket. I considered spending the night in a pocket if the hammock didn't work out. As I was resting in the hammock and teasing the bugs outside the bug net, I heard two hikers arrive at the shelter. I made my way over to the shelter to greet them. "Thank you for coming." They were a man and woman from Quebec who were section hiking and finishing the last couple of sections they needed to complete their end-to-ends. We had a nice chat, and they decided to set up their tent in the shelter. Bernie told me about the, quote, privy from hell at Dean Shelter that was overrun by flies. I asked him if he had seen the privy here yet. He hadn't, and I decided to let him discover the Cowles Cove alfresco privy on his own. At 7:30 p.m., I said goodnight. I made my way back to my hammock and got into it for my first night. I put my Petzl headlamp in one of the pockets above my head and my glasses and case in the other. I set my alarm for 6 a.m. and hung my watch in the loop at the top of the bug net. I then wiggled out of my hiking clothes and into my sleepwear and wondered if this was how Cirque du Soleil held their auditions. It was a very warm night, and I lay on top of the bag and prayed for snow. As soon as the sun went down, it cooled off into the 60s, and I got inside the bag. Sleep did not come. I stretched out on my back, and then both sides. All of these positions were comfy, but my brain kept saying, "Hey, man, you're alone in the woods. You're in a hammock. Ooh-wee, isn't this cool? Listen to those bugs outside. What's the Yankees score? Don't go to sleep. You don't want to miss anything." I think I drifted off around 9:30 p.m. and slept until 10:52 p.m. when I heard a loud wood-crunching sound coming from the woods off to my right. My eyes popped open so wide you could have used them as on-deck circles. I tried to stay calm while simultaneously preparing for mortal combat with Ursa Vermonta, the hammock-eating Bruin. All I could think of, besides whether or not the afterlife would go well, was to put on my headlamp so I could use it to blind the predator in the hopes that it would think the sun had come up and it was time for a nap. The woods noise abated, but my heartbeat was deafening. And then I had to pee. No, not tonight, maybe not ever. I summoned my courage, tried to remember if Tumble had the phone number of our life insurance agent, crawled out of my hammock, and entered the night with my headlamp on stun. No bear. Nice nocturnal nature break, return to hammock. How blissful it is to sleep in the woods, alone. With all the excitement, I slept fitfully, ignoring another woods noise at 2 a.m., and awoke at 5 a.m. to daylight. I decided to get up early to ensure that I could get to Appalachian Gap by 11 a.m. to meet Tumble. It was already warm and getting warmer, and the sooner I hit the trail, the better. Packing up was a breeze. I rolled up the hammock into its comfy little pocket bag with no problems. I ate some tofurkey jerky for breakfast. I could not face a hot cup of oatmeal in this heat. Said goodbye to the couple in the shelter. See you on the trail. I'll break the cobwebs for you. And was on the trail by 6:30 a.m. Right away, as I navigated the ups and downs, I began to sweat heavily. Today's forecast? Mostly sunny and humid and hot, with lots of swarming bugs wherever rough is. I hiked steadily south, stopping at Huntington Gap to photograph raspberry flowers, and reached Birch Glen Camp by 8:08 a.m. Yes, I got a high five from the dragon and snuck by the nemesis again. I stopped at Birch Glen Camp, it was empty, and took a break while munching on a Cliff Bar. From there, the trail took a decided upward slant, and I began sweating again, accompanied by heavy breathing, rapid heartbeat, and a general lack of zest for life. The trail kept going up. It gained over 600 feet in about a half mile, and I took lots of breaks, but kept on moving. I was very glad when I made it to Molly Stark's balcony and was able to call Tumble to report my progress. The view at the balcony was socked in with a humid haze, and there was very little breeze. The trail in this section has been heavily traveled and is wide with many bare rocks and countless exposed tree roots. Being familiar with the hike down to App Gap helped keep me going. I was sweating so much that the sweat was steadily drifting off both of my sleeves. The bugs were relentless, but they were well down on my scale of needs, the first being oxygen, that they really didn't concern me. One particularly large bug crashed into my glasses lens and dropped off a bar of Irish Spring. Huh. It was all I could do to scale up Baby Stark and then get down to the gap. I dropped into the gap at 10:51 a.m. and spotted Tumble in the car. Yes! She brought me cold Gatorade, which was so good. I did it. I spent my first night in my hammock in the woods. The hammock is a definite winner, but hiking in such heat and humidity is tougher than I remembered, and I can't wait to get out there again. This has been a presentation of LongTrailPodcast.com. We hope you will return and enjoy future podcasts about Vermont's Long Trail. Until then, this is Ruff of Rough and Tumble, Long Trail, end-to-end, 2003.